Let's begin. We welcome here. Who's online?
Recording
with us?
In progress.
Reza Bachi is here.
Is that the Kohen, Dr. Rabbi Kohen?
No, he's not. He's not here yet. Page 282. I always wondered if there's a significance to the number of the Mizmah. Now we talk gematrius. When we started the Hakdama to Tehillim, we mentioned that if I'm not mistaken, Tehillim is the only sefer in the entire Tanakh whose chapter breaks are real. Because everything else in Tanakh, the chapter breaks are the Christian chapter breaks. I mean, we have chapter breaks. We have a Parsha Psucha, a Parsha Stuma, and we know exactly how many there are. When it comes to Nevi'im and Ksuvim, it's not so simple, the different traditions. But Chumash, it seems that we do. The Rambam lays out all the parashat Pesuchah Stumos. So the number system that we use is a secular reference to break up the sections of Tanakh. And every once in a while, we come to a chapter break, and we learn Nevi'im. We had a commentary from our very own Rachel Miller to show that there's literally, if you really know Christian theology well, every single chapter break is pure unadulterated apikoresis. Pure apikoresis. And if you are fluent in their theology and their agenda, okay, their agenda and their theology, you learn the psukim, you learn the mefarshim, you can see, you can touch the apikoresis in the chapter breaks. And that's true throughout the entire Tanakh. There's one exception. I was reviewing the Hakdama. One of the things that we learned in the introduction to Tehillim is the exception is Tehillim.
Which is why they're not called Prokim.
Psalm, what are they called?
Mizmor.
Remember, Dr. Orly was always very makbid with me. She never called a chapter break in Tehillim a perek. Perek Yudzayin.
It's the Jewish influence, the capital.
From the
Latin became eventually the Yiddish term for it. So,
for a chapter.
Yeah.
For some reason, the Hasidim very makbid, they never said the word perek. They called the chapter breaks a capital. Capital this. I don't know what the difference is between a perek and a capital. You learn the sefer Yirmiyah. For some reason, what difference does it make? They call it capital perek. I remember when I was in high school, maybe in Illinois, we had a Rebbe, he taught us Nach, a Hasidish Rebbe, he was very good, he passed away young, unfortunately. And he once gave us his whole speech. You're not allowed to call in the Vim Perek. Yeah, Kapitel. I don't remember what he said, no recollection.
I think it was Yiddish.
I know, what's the difference? What's the difference between Kapitel?
No,
I don't know. I don't remember. But one day, Rabbi Orlian, fast forward 25 years, Rabbi Dr. Orlian, Zechet Tzadik Levracha, he was very angry with me. He never really got really angry, but he Rabbi Orlian, if you know Rabbi Orlian, Rabbi Kalman, you remember Rabbi Orlian? Rabbi Kalman? You know Rabbi Orlian?
Yeah.
Yeah, you knew Mitchell Orlian? He once came here. He came here a few times this year.
That was
the
only one there.
What?
Yeah, he was in middle.
He wasn't well. When he came here, he wasn't well. He was not at all well. But he was a master Talmud Chacham, a Baki Muflug in Tanakh. He taught Tanakh for how many years? 50 years, maybe even more, in Yeshiva University, in Diktuk, a lot of Chidushim. And he was always very stern. He was very, very upset. If I would ever refer to a chapter in Tehillim, he would say Tehillim. Tehillim.
Yeah.
I would call it a parrot. It's a mizmah. When you reference a section in Tehillim, you call it a mizmah. Psalm. Mizmah. So this, from all the books of Tanakh, is the only one that has the purity of the way we refer to it, that it's accurate. Now, I know you'll tell me it's not because we have over here 150 parokim, 150 mizmoirim, I'm sorry, mizmoirim, and it says in the Gemara there's 147, and there's this very big debate where exactly which mizmoirim have to be split into two. Okay, fine, so we're going to split two of them into two, which one, the first two, this, that.
It's our doing,
but put those aside, the other one, but our doing, but obviously it was done. And we made that break. And at the end of the day, is there is a purity in the numbering system.
Who decided the order?
It's a good question. It seems that whoever compiled, who compiled Tehillim? It's not so clear.
So they're independent, really. That's why there's no order there.
No, but it was done by Ruach HaKodesh. The order obviously has very great significance. And we, unfortunately, we don't, it's very hard to see the order. It's almost impossible to figure out.
We rarely see that kind of linkage, that kind of continuity.
Between one mizmar and the next.
Way you would in Polish,
and because as we learned in the Gross Gedolos, every commentator has a whole different interpretation of at what time period in the life of David was it composed. And some of the mizmar, we have a debate who actually composed them. I mean, it says, and we learn the Medrash, there are 10 individuals who contributed to the Tehillim. We have from David, we have from
B'nai
Korach. But when it says La'alam Tzach B'nai Korach, does that mean that they themselves said this word, or was it that David, Al Pi Ruach HaKodesh, knew what they said, and David expressed it in his language? There are many mysteries. But Chazal do tell us that basically there were 10 people who contributed to this book. Who compiled it? The Anshei Knesset HaGedoyla? Or was it before? Was it David himself? I don't know. Was it Shlomo? Was it the Nevi'im who lived at that time? Maybe it says somewhere exactly. Who was the one that put the final stamp on? Did it go through a process of being edited? Things were added, they were taken away. There's no one that's going to deny the fact that it was Al Pi Ruach HaKodesh. That when the final version in the order and the selection was done without a shadow of a doubt Al Pi Ruach HaKodesh, and that there must then be significance in its order. Cannot possibly be. Now my next level of question is there significance in the number mizmor? Because obviously certain numbers are much more prominent in Judaism than other numbers. The number 7 is a very important number in Judaism. I mean, number 7. So if you go and you learn Mizmor Zayin in Tehillim, and you want to say, oh, I want to understand the depth of the significance of the number 7, can I possibly say that if I study Mizmor Zayin, I'm going to learn something significant about the number 7? Is there any truth to that? You can't say that in Chumash, because in Chumash, the ones who made the chapter break are the Goyim. It's a Christian division, so it's totally total nonsense to say that the Perek Zayin in Bereishis has any significance. It's nonsense to say such a thing. You want to go say that Ashkacha Pratis, that what the Goyim did has meaning for us? If you want to say that, listen, say whatever you want to say. But the bottom line is, it was done by Goyim, but not Tehillim. It's pure. There's a tahira in Tehillim, is that each mizmar stands alone, and they were arranged in a significant way. And I'm just coming to share with you a dilemma that I think about: is there any significance? Now, why do I say that today? Because say we're mizmar lamed gimel, and lamed gimel is a very significant number in Judaism. Okay, we all know that Lamed Gimel is you know, the Omer. Lamed Gimel, I'll rattle you off a whole number of Lamed Gimels from my collection. I have
the last word of the previous was Lamed Bet.
Lev, that's very interesting.
And now Lamed Gimel.
You see that? That's fascinating. You can't just brush that away, because the Mizmarim are sacred. And someone arranged them, and it was done Al Pi Ruach HaKodesh, that no one's going to deny. And you're saying, I didn't realize that, called Yishrei Lev, and now comes the 33rd Mizmah. Is there significance in delving into what it says and learning a lesson about the number 33?
I think it would be hard-pressed to make those connections.
Okay, I'm not saying. I'll give you just some examples of.
Yeah, if the first two Tehillim are really one, it would be Vav Beis, it would be ready.
If the
being a major stretch.
Yeah.
Okay, you have examples.
There are.
So once again, if the first two Mizmorim is really one, learned, then this would be really wave.
Right, okay, right. That's true, that's true.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
but once it was decided these are the numbers, let's go.
Okay, so we know the number 33 does have significance in different areas of halacha and nagada, and maybe.
The lag ba'omer came. No, it didn't come before that. No,
okay.
Came later on, much later on than when Tehillim was written.
What?
Tehillim
was written. Right. But the number 33 appears. For example, when the Torah talks about the Bnei Leah. Leah had 33 children. Okay, 33 children. We come, when he came into Mitzrayim, the Torah says the number 33. The Torah says explicitly that B'nai Leah are 33. We came into Eretz Yisrael, they are 33. So when you talk about the number 33, you are delving into a subset of the Jewish people, a specific subset, the B'nai Leah. There's the B'nai Leah, and there's the B'nai Rachel. There's the B'nai Zilpa and the B'nai Bila. You're delving into a specific subset of Klal Yisrael that has very, the Darshanim who want to understand. You have to, we don't really talk about this. You don't hear people dashing about this. Is that you break up Klal Yisrael into four groups? You can't deny that. There are Shloisha Ovos. I mean, okay, let's go to the list. Yaakov Avinu, and Yaakov had four wives, and from those four wives, it comes Klal Yisrael. So, you know, we break up Klal Yisrael into 12 Shvatim, or we break them up into 13 Shvatim, or we break them up later on, there's the Malchus of Klal Yisrael split. You know, there are many different dimensions and how you break up Klal Yisrael in different eras. The Malchus of Yehuda versus the Malchus of Yisrael. Malchus of Yehuda was only two Shvatim, was Binyamin and Yehuda, versus the Malchus of Yisrael were the other 10 Shvatim. You break up Klal Yisrael into those who are in the Eder HaYarden, the east side of the Yarden, versus those that are on the west side of the Yarden. Okay, Reuven, Gad, and Chatzi Shevet, Menashe. So when you study Tanakh, Klal Yisrael is always being sliced and diced into different groups, in different eras. Malchus Yisrael, Malchus Yehuda. Eivir HaYarden versus those that are in the main section of Eretz Yisrael. You refer to the B'nei HaShvachos, the children bring Klal Yisrael into two groups. There's Rachel and Leah on one side, and then there's the B'nei HaShvachos. We don't give the Shvatim that come from Bilhah and Zilpah the same weight. We don't give them when they're ordered. There are so many different dimensions in Tanakh and in Jewish history where Klal Yisrael is being divided. Kohanim, Levim, Yisraelim. The Kohanim stand here, the Levim stand here, and the Yisraelim stand there. Klal Yisrael throughout Tanakh and Israel always being divided and sliced and diced in different areas. There's another almost most fundamental division. And there are four Imams. There are four. And obviously each family has a unique character. So 33 is a significant number because it represents in Klal Yisrael that number conjures up, because it's a pasuk in the Torah, the B'nai Leah. It's significant. Okay, yeah, when you have Matan Torah, what is the significance of the number 33 relative to Matan Torah, to Sfiras Omer? It's two-thirds. Two-thirds. When you get today, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu said that the tafkid of Yitzias Mitzrayim is to give the Torah, it's a 50-day process. And when you come to Lag BaOmer 33, you are now two-thirds, which means there's no longer a mi'ut. There's no longer, what is a mi'ut? Say, let's go back to another basic rule. The number 33 also represents the largest mi'ut, minority. Why do I say the largest minority? Because in halacha, I think Rav Tzadik says this. Heard this many years ago. This is very fascinating. Well, the number 33. The number 100 is also a significant number, obviously. What is called a minority? They talk about in America. Minorities, a minority. The word is like, you know, today it's an explosive word. What's a minority? The mahus of a minority in halacha means the remainder is at least double. That's the types of a minority. Is it right? I don't remember the exact proof of this principle. That you have, you break up a group, so you have part will be here, part will be here.
You're talking about what a minority, you're talking about what a supermajority is.
A roy 51% is what we would call a supermajority, even though in the world that's not so. A supermajority is probably 70.
You said two-thirds.
These are terms of how you vote. But when you look at a mute, a minority, when you get to the number 33, what does that mean? Let's even with 100, because 100 is a basic number, is a number that's very relevant to number 33. If you have 100%, okay, that's a fair number, 100%. Mm-hmm. And now you have 33%. What does that mean? It means that the leftover, whatever is not part of 33, is double. Double. If those who disagree with you or not part of your group are double, that makes you to minority. If you start with 100% and I am from the 33%, so what is left over? 64%. So the 64% is, I'm sorry, 67%. So that means that those who disagree with me are double. Once you get to 34, those that disagree with you are no longer double. They may be more numerous, but they're not double. The last time you come to a point, Mr. Bloom, good morning. Welcome back to the world of reality. Once you get past the number 33, while you're 33, you're outnumbered 2-1. Once you get to 34, then now I'm a baldaiva. Because even though there are more people who disagree with me than agree with me, they're not double. Thus, the number 33 is in halacha considered to be the highest miut, the highest minority. Okay, in America, I don't know what they call minority. I think in America, if it's you're part of 99%, it's still called a minority because there's one person who's with you. America is a perverted version of what it means to be a minority, right? There may be 99% of the population that disagrees with you, but I'm still in. Okay, wait. You have to explain this in the right words. Okay, but the number 33, but I'm not being fair and giving you more examples because for some reason I can't find them over here in my notebook. But there is a ceiling. So therefore, it just sticks out in the number 33. And again, to review this point, the Mizmorim in Tehillim are sacred. It's the only book in the entire Tanakh that has not been defiled by the Gentiles. It is a purity in Tehillim that does not exist anymore in Tanakh, because the Goyim have penetrated Tanakh and have contributed to the Pirakim, the chapter breaks, which we all use, and it's not going nowhere. And
yet the Gentiles use the Psalms.
They don't have a choice.
As a major one of their prayers.
And yet that is something which they fail. David was Zoyche.
To take control.
David was Zoyche to take control and prevent the Goyim from damaging Sefer Tehillim having them infiltrate, contaminating Sefer Tehillim by them putting a title, giving Mashlita over the chapter breaks. So therefore, certainly the chapter breaks are sacred, and certainly the order is sacred. My dilemma to you is, does the number carry any significance? When you go to a cemetery and you say the name of the Niftar, Kuf Mizmar Kuf Yutes, and each letter has eight little psukim, and you read the name of the person earning those psukim, is there significance in the number 119? Is there any significance? You know, 119 is one number. 119 is really 120. Think about that. Because in Judaism, also you have to appreciate that really chapter 119, 119, a baby that's born, how old is a baby when a baby is born? I always love to tease children with this. How old are you? I'm 3 years old, right? I'm 3 years old. Wow, 3 years old, 2 years old. One kid once said to me, I'm 3 years old and three quarters. Who taught you that? Then I say, how old is the baby that was just born? And they go, blah, blah, blah. I say, he's 0 years old. The baby is zero. If you're 3 years old, the baby is 0 years old.
Yes,
right? So, but we don't say that. But we don't say that. The baby in halacha is really... The baby is really in halacha, how old? 1 year. He's in his first year. The baby is in his first year. Isn't it interesting that how long does a person live? I mean, there's the Messiah. The Ahayu Yamav Nea the Esrim Shana. 120. When we go and we commemorate the life of a person, what do? We say to Hillim, which Mizmar? Mizmar Kuf Yutes. 119. Is there a statement in that alone? That when we commemorate the person, we say 119, are we saying he just missed it? That the person, that every person who leaves this world, they came for a purpose, and the purpose is v'hoyu yomav me'a v'esrim shana. Even though I know the pasuk on the pasuk doesn't refer to that, but that's anyway, the world has taken control of that pasuk and darshan that pasuk to refer to that the life expectancy of a person is 120 years. And when we commemorate his life, we say, shucks, he just missed it. He just missed it by 1 year. Kuf Yutes, 119. Or do you want to say Kuf Yutes really is 120, because once you get to 119, you're now in 120th year. Is there such significance to saying that? V'hoyu yomav me'a v'esrim yoyim, and this is the Mizmar that traditionally Klal Yisrael from time immemorial is using to fatayish, to commemorate a person's name. You don't only buy a cemetery. No one says the person's name when they say Tehillim. They don't do that. I never heard that. Right? No one says the psukim of a person. The only time you say the psukim on the order of the person's name, then the sham is only in a cemetery. I never saw someone say the psukim when they're saying Tehillim for someone who's not well. They say by when the person already left this world. The Kuf Yutes, it's one number before 120. I mean, in the Torah, it does it all the time. You're supposed to count 50 days. We only count 49. You're supposed to give 40 lashes. We only give 39. There's something with Chazal, somehow, they're always off by one number. It's not a coincidence. The Hayu Yamav, Me'av Yeshem Yayim, man's destiny is 120 years. And we're saying, Mizmar, Kuf Yutes. It's not the Haloi Davar, Kuf Yutes, and when you look at the pattern of Chazal, always to refer to the complete number, but to refer to the number 4. When they went down to Mitzrayim, it says there were 70 people. There were no 70 people, there were 69 people. And Chazal have to come up backwards. Yochevich was born Bein HaChomos. That doesn't count. She didn't have a passport. She was born Bein HaChomos. Chazal consistently, they see in the Torah that when we refer, they use a full number, but it's really the number 1 before. Halot Davar? A person supposed to live 120 years, and when we want to go and memorialize a person by saying his name and saying psukim, we have selected, or it's Bahashkocha Pratis, that Mizmar Kuf Yutes is the Mizmar. Is there a message in that? Has to be. How come we don't find such things when it comes to Chamish Lichum Shei Torah or the rest of Nach? Because that's not holy. That's the Christians. They have penetrated. They have contaminated Tanakh. So we're learning over here something very significant. Number 33 is Loi Poshut. Number 33 is a very significant number. It's a famous Ibn Ezra.
Gal.
Gal, 33 is a spooky number. There's a famous Ibn Ezra that spooks everyone out. Ibn Ezra says on Yom Kippurim, there's a halacha, the so'ir la'azazel. You take two animals that look alike, and you do the goyrel, and one animal you slaughter, you bring the blood inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and the other animal you push off a cliff. What is that all about? Push off a cliff? What? The Sar La'azazel? So the Ibn Ezra says, when you'll get to the number 33, you'll understand what this means. A whole library has been written to explain what in the world does the Ibn Ezra mean when he says, when you'll get to the number 33. By the way, Yaakov Avinu, how many years of his life was diminished? Yaakov was supposed to live to 180, and he lived to 147. He lost out 33 years. 33 years for complaining. Ma'at viro'im. Ha yimei.
Shnei
chayav osai. Okay, so the number 33 by Yaakov Avinu, 33 by Bnei Leah. Ibn Ezra says if you want to know the sod of the Sor La'azazel, wait until you get to 33. And there's so many commentators that explain what that means. The simple pshat is, in 33 psukim ahead, it says that it represents the Avodah Zarah. Suddenly, yeah, that's also El Kabbalistic stuff. I don't know then, whatever it is. But there are many perushim. 33 is no small number. It's a very significant number 33. Eid Hagal Hazeh. Number 33 is the separation between the Yaakov and Klal Yisrael. Eid Hagal Hazeh. This is not a simple number 33. It's a spooky number. And now, when we come to Shabbos coming soon. Rananu, this is the first Mizmor of the edition of what we embellish on Shabbos Kodesh. Rananu Tzadikim B'Hashem La'Yisharim Nova Sihila. It's a long Mizmor. Okay, let's look over here. Let's to what we can see. Mitzvah Zavid. First Mitzvah Zavid. Pasuk Al B'Hashem. Rananu Tzadikim made it. It is a command. This is a command. May the Tzadikim, may they exult. May they sing song. Ba, what is the base? What's the base? Why doesn't it say La Hashem or Li Hashem? What's the Ba Hashem? Bimahalle Hashem. What do we mean by that? So he's explaining Ranu Tzadikim with those that praise Hashem. The Tzadikim, Ranu Tzadikim Ba Hashem, he's saying a very deep comment here. The Mitzvah stuff that it doesn't mean in Hashem or with Hashem or to Hashem. It means, if I'm not mistaken, this is what he's saying that you shall sing to Hashem together with others who praise Hashem. Baha, with those that are together with Hashem. Look at the Targum. Shabachut Sadikaya. Now he learns differently. He completely disagrees. Okay, the Targum, there's no Rashi here, unfortunately, not that I'm aware of. Did I miss something here? No. There's no Rashi, but it would appear that the Mitzvah David is going off on his own. He's a vigilante. He's taking the law into his own hands. And the Targum over here is a classic, you know, this is what the Targum Unkelus would say this. But this is Targum. Who wrote the Targum on this? I don't know. No one really knows. Who wrote the Targum on Tehillim? Not so simple. but it says here Kodom Hashem, which means before. It's and that the question is then asked. That's not what it says in the pasuk. If it's Rami Tzadikim, it should say Rami Tzadikim BeHashem, or I'm not even sure. I'm not sure the grammar, but Kodom Hashem means before. Tzadikim, present yourself before Hashem and give forth praise. Is that what it says in the Mitzudos? He says, B'mahalli, he's eating a whole word of the pasuk. Obviously he's bothered with the Ba. Together with those that praise Hashem. Maybe we'll see a little bit more. Let's learn the Malbim. We need to hear some.
By the Radak, he wants to change it to Lach.
This is the big problem. We sit in Shabbos, every Shabbos, you have to know what we're saying over here. Okay, let's see all one at a time. Let's go to a later commentator first. We'll skip generations. We'll come back to Radak in a moment. Let's learn some Lamalabim. Lamalabim sometimes provides a little more an overview. That's what they did. I never understood. You don't have Rishonim. They give overviews. Somehow the style of the Rishonim is always just to get to the point. You don't have like these. The Achronim are the ones who like to rewrite Tanakh and tell you the whole story.
So that's why we want to say how Barman Held is considered. Because he doesn't get right to the point.
He gives very.
He deconstructs everybody else first.
That's the sin of an Achronim.
You think is right.
That's a style of the Achronim. That's not a style of the Rishonim.
Right, that's what I mean.
But he's considered to be the last. The last expanse. He's very late, 1492.
He died in 1508.
It's a very late to consider him to be a Rishon. It's a little shocking, but they do. Let's see the Malbim on page 280. Malbim. Ranu Hamizmar Hazeh Neschaber El Inyan HaRishon. What is the Inyan HaRishon? He explains, Beir Boi Ki Hashem Manik Es Olamoy B'Shnei Minei Han Hogois. Hashem, he's going, when he says Inyan HaRishon, means the beginning of the Sefer. In the beginning of Sefer Tehillim, we learned about creation. David, they were a collection of mizmorim describing Hashem as the creator and delving into the neflois haboirei, the wonders of creation. And that, and only later did David go and delve into his personal issues, his frustration of being a fugitive, and what happened to him with Shaul, and in the Midbar Zif, and with other tragedies that he suffered in his life with Bathsheba, v'chulu. Here we're going back to describing the beauty of creation. Obviously, that's why this mizmor has been selected to be recited on Yom HaShavi'i, because Yom HaShavi'i is Vayuchulu Hashamayim Ve'oretz V'chol Tzivah Vayichal Elokim Vayom HaShavi'i Mikol Melachto Yasher Asah. So this mizmor is going to delve into creation, going to delve into the reality of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Neflois HaBorei of the conclusion and the interaction of all the elements of creation to create a functional world. So that's what it means. We're going back to the Inhibition, where we dwelled upon the beginning of the Sefer. It will be explained in this Mizmah, Ki Hashem Amaniges Olamo B'Shnei Minei Hanogas. Hashem conducts this world with two different techniques. Shehi HaTivius HaMiyusedes Al Chukim Kivurim Bilti Mishtanim. Science. Believe in the science. Trust the science. Bothers me very much why they tell people, believe in the science. Every living creature believes in the science. The question is, do we believe in you? What does that mean? But trust the science. Of course we trust. Who doesn't trust the science? Everyone knows that if you put your hand in fire, you're going to be burnt. Everyone knows basic science. What is this nonsense? Trust the science. And then when you ask them, so explain to us the science, they openly say, you're too dumb and stupid to understand. So trust us. Oh, so it's not about trusting the science, it's about trusting you. Oh, so that's a different story. This is not the way it's supposed to be. Yeah, no, Michal, you agree with me?
There's a term called scientism, which is...
Trust the people who tell you. Everyone believes. There's no living creature that doesn't believe in science. The question is, do we believe in you? That's the question. So Shehi Hativius Hamiyusedes Al Chukim Kavuim Belubilti Mishtanim. There's science in this world. Things cannot be changed. There's a world of reality. That's the way the world works. There's nothing you can do. And then there's a second concept. And the second concept is that within the world of science, there's room for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to enter and to bring about, arrange things in a certain way where signs will be working in your favor. It's an amazing concept, is that Hashem left over a little bit, there's signs, yeah? Let's read the words.
The two traps.
Yeah.
There are the immutable laws, usually of nature, right? And then there's
Hashkocha
Pratis. Then there's direction, which is reaction to human behavior.
He's saying. No.
He's saying it's a reaction to the choices
But it would appear that would... You're going into very, very deep, deep areas here. Or in a person, it would appear at face value, what he's saying is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu directs this world in a way that's not part of science. And that Hanhaga is invisible. Like you have an event. What are the chances that such a thing would happen? Zero. I was spooked out yesterday. I'll tell you an example of what I mean. I'll tell you, I went to a bris 2 days ago. 2 days I went to a bris. I came late. So I got my tefillin. I took my tefillin, went to the bris. And suddenly, then, I don't know how this happened. I left my tefillin by the bris. I left it there. So I come back the next day. I go the next day to where I daven regularly. I wake up, I come, I run, always running late, finally come there, open the locker. Where am I tefillin? Give out. I have to take a step back. What did I actually tell you? Let's take a step back. At the bris, I was talking to someone, at the bris is over, and I walked out, I was talking to the Rosh Hashiva of this yeshiva. I was walking with him, and we walked around the corner to where his car was. And I was talking to him about something important. And then we were standing there by his car, and we were talking. And then I said goodbye to him. He got into his car, and I went on my way. Okay, that's what happened at the end of the bris. Walked around the corner, around a certain place where he parked his car, in an important conversation. Fine. Okay, fast forward 24 hours later, almost. I go to yeshiva to go daven. Where am I tilling? Gone. Panic. Mama Shapanda. And also my locker was open. I always leave, when I take out my thing, I leave the locker open so I don't have to open it again when I put it back inside. There's nothing else inside. Oh, I must have left it at the bris. So I run. I'm running in roundabout, to get there. And then as I'm coming, I'm passing that exact same spot where 24 hours ago I was talking to this Rosh Shiva. And as I'm passing, he drives and he pulls in. He was late to davening, by the way. He pulls in and he gets out. And as I'm going, I meet him in that exact spot. And now we're both going into the yeshiva. So he says to me, so we're continuing where we left off. What are the chances that would happen? Zero.
Obviously not zero.
Zero. No, it's zero. The chance that would happen, I don't know what it means. I don't know what it means. But like, that is that science?
Zero.
Is that science?
Close to zero, but it's not zero.
So what happened to
your tefillin? Nothing. I found it. Baruch Hashem, I found it.
Where was it?
It was where I left it, on the table, where I left it. So what are the chances of that happening? In my opinion, zero. What does it mean? I have no idea. That's none of my business. But is that science?
It's a probability theory.
No, probability is science. Probability is science.
Rabbi, my grandsons have a tracker on their building. You can track it through your smartphone.
It's a very good idea. Very good idea. But you need to pay a subscription. I can't afford to pay a subscription per month. $50 to put a GPS tracking device on my phone. If you have a child, you put on your child a tracking device, but not on your children. So, my point over here is...
Maybe you needed to finish the conversation.
No, we didn't finish any conversation. I'm just giving you an example which spooked me out recently in memory. Is that science? is that everyone here has a story like that. Everyone has a thousand stories like that. What do these stories mean? No one knows what they mean. No one knows. No one knows what that means. Look, I went to a Levi. I know this person. I had to go to Menachem Olam, very far. Some of my parents knew very, very well. And he was going and figuring out how the Hashkocha, how he met his wife. This person's wife passed away. Young. And he's really in a lot of pain. And he's sitting there by the Beis Ovel, talking the Hashkocha Pratis. The most bizarre things happened that he happened to be in the right place at the right time. A whole sequence, a Purim story. And he's like in this trance. What are the chances that he would be here, should be there, this? You know what the answer is? Zero. Not 1%. Not 0.000001. The chances are zero.
That would be every question.
That's right.
There's only one person for one guy. What are the chances in 18 billion people in the world you're finding that one person? And they happen to.
You can't prove it. That's part of Hashem's. That is exactly part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Yodzoichi. Hashem's Hester Ponim. Sha'omar li'oilomoy dai. Hashem says, I don't want my name. I want to be hidden. I want to be discreet. This week's Haftorah. Hatsnea leches. Hashem has a yearning to hide. But think about it in reality. Every single person in this room has this situation multiple times. Very often. Tell me, what are the chances? The chances are zero. You can't prove it. Go to a laboratory. No. It's 0.00001. So you won the lottery today. How come when I go buy a lottery ticket, I'm not so lucky? The answer is, there is something left over in this world. There is an element left over in this world that is divine. We live in a world of science. Can everybody say please? Everybody. We live in a world of science. But there is something left over in this world that is not science, that is divine. Yeah. There is an element. No, for they say from the Bar Ditshuva. The Bar Ditshuva, my father, Zechon Baruch, always used to say this. The Eibishtah Firzach Levelt, Ruba Deruba. HaKadosh Baruch Hu controls this world, Ruba Deruba, 99.9%. He leans over a little bit in this world for you to make trouble. Hey, the Baruch Hu said this. Ruba Hashem, he controls the world. Not entirely. Ruba de Ruba. Science is 99.99999%, but there's a little bit left over in this world where Hashem, he pulls the shots. In a way, it is impossible to identify Hashem scientifically, but you know he's there.
But science says it differently. Science says that everything's happening by science, and that 0.0001 is part of the science of probability.
So, see, that's a matter of a moon. You can't prove that.
The word natural means it follows science. Supernatural means it doesn't follow science.
No, supernatural means if I go and I turn this into a piece of wood. Supernatural means this is a cup of a coffee. Moshe Rabbeinu, he turns a snake into a stick.
Because there's zero probability for that.
No, that breaks the laws of science.
Because there's zero
probability. Probability is not, you're not breaking any laws of science. You're exactly acknowledging that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is being a manig. And the manig is not a violation of the rules of science, but it's not science. It's not, because according to the laws of science, this can't happen. And you can't prove it. You can't prove it. There's no instrument in the laboratory that can prove it. There are two hanhogos in this world. There are the laws of science which cannot be violated. But Hashem built into this world an area where he enters. And he brings about events through science, and he does not put a signature on these events. These are, I guess, a probability. The story of Purim is the poster child for this principle. What are the chances all of these things are going to line up and work out this way? Oh, just a coincidence. No, it's not a coincidence, because a coincidence is also scientific. There are also numbers. There are also chances. The chance of this happening, we know, are zero. And the reason why it was arranged and it came about in this way was because HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he has entered into this world. He has entered and he has brought about certain events. There's a divine revelation in this world that's built into the Hanhaga of this world. Can you prove it? No, you can't. You can't prove it, but is it true? We know it. Is it true? Well, you have to have emunah. You have to have emunah that it's true. You have to have emunah that the chance of the Purim story happening is zero. You have to have emunah. If you don't have emunah, big deal. You got lucky. You got lucky. You got lucky. Good for you. You got lucky.
Elohim.
So you say Asher Bara. Bara is the science. It's science. All the rules of science. Lasois. Hashem also built into this world an opening, a back door where HaKadosh Baruch Hu arranges things according to his liking that are not scientific.
He orchestrates things. He orchestrates it through using science, but he orchestrates it.
Right. His orchestration does not violate any scientific rule, but it's not scientific, the orchestration. You cannot. The Purim story, and every single person, every single day, goes through multiple Purim stories. So, what will you say? Coincidence! When you say the word coincidence, what are you really saying? It's scientific. It's part of science. Science. There are chances. You throw dice on the table. There are chances. Things happen. There are many different events happening in this world. It's a chance. So, it's scientific. You have to have emunah that the events, the way they play out in your life, are not scientific. The chances of the dice falling out the way they fell out are zero. And the way it resulted is purely an act of God. It is a revelation of Hashem. And guess what? You can't even prove that. You can't. You can't prove it. You have to believe it. Someone told me this room. We were walking down the street with someone on Shabbos, and he was talking about it, and then something happened. And he said to me, what do you think the chances of that happening? It was very relevant to what was going on. And what do you think the chance of that happening? What would you say? 1%? 0.001? This is like super bizarre. So he said, I told him 0.001. So he says to me, you're wrong. What we just saw happen, the chance of that happening are zero. 0.000% of that. This was an act of God. Did it violate any rules of science? No. Can you prove it's an act of God? No. But was this an act of God? If you tell me it was 0.001%, it's like throwing dice. It could happen. It's science.
You throw dice and you keep on getting 100 times. It's not a good
example of throwing dice, but the chances are zero. Can you prove it's zero? You cannot. You have to have emunah that it's zero, and then realize what just happened was Masa Elokim, the Yad Hashem. Oh, it doesn't have all the glory of Kriyas Yamsuf, the glory of a bolt of lightning coming out and knocking out your enemy. It doesn't have all the glory. It's just a regular boring day. Nothing is going on. Hashem doesn't appear with Anani HaKavod and the Mon. But come on, what are the chances of this happening? What's the chance of the Purim story happening? Zero. And unfortunately, we have a tendency to say it's not zero. Don't say that. It's 0.000001.
It's infinitesimal.
That's what we like to say. When you say that, you say that it's really science. And believe in the science, trust the science. I believe science. Everyone believes that this is a couple of what everyone. But that would happen is not science. Because science needs at least a one somewhere after many, many zeros and a dot. And when you have to acknowledge that the chances of this event happening the way it did truly are zero. How could it have happened then? There's a higher authority in this world that is controlling things. That's what it comes down to. And that's what the Malbim in essence is saying. There are two hanhagos, and that's this mizmor. The mizmor is going to vacillate between the two hanhagos of Hashem. One more time, the words of these holy words of the Malbim. Ranunu on page 283. Ranunu ba mizmor zeh nischa al yirushin. Ber bo ki man neges oilam b'shnei minei hanhagos. Shehi. Number one is hativ iyis. There is nature, the laws of nature, science. Hamiyusedes, which is established, al chukim kivuim, set fixed rules that do not change one iota. Bilti mishtanim.
Immutable.
Immutable.
That's like a cup of coffee.
That's the way it is. That a snake doesn't turn into a stick. If someone turns a snake into a stick, he's breaking the rules of nature. And that does not happen in our times. Then there's something entirely different. This is all part of creation. The hahanhoga hahashkochiyis. Hashem is still moving things around. It's not part of science. Shehi neheges and Hashem tzilicha. Hashem, it's not science. Hashem will guide events in your life correlating to your behavior and your faith in Him. Shehi neheges lefi maasei b'nei adam toivora. To your behavior. To your choices. Okay, that's a good word. And this mizmar will explain that
what's
element.
What's the true translation of hashgacha?
Oversight. Okay, you get hashgacha. You get go buy food. Is this who's under whose hashgacha? Is this? Well, you're looking at the food right now. Hashgacha means who's looking at it. Hashgacha means to oversee. Well, you're looking at the food, so it's under your hashgacha. Okay, the way we use it today means who's rabbinic supervision.
This is a different idea than you've been talking about nisim and things like that.
No, that is not this.
That's not what he's talking.
No, that's what I'm talking. I'm sorry. I don't think I'm saying what he is saying. This is not science.
It's still within, it's still, I mean, it's natural events.
It's not supernatural. Supernatural is a third category, which doesn't exist on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Let's break up with it. There are three hanhagos. There is nature, and then there is supernatural, and then there is hashkocha. What do you call hashkocha? Supernatural is you float on the air. You can fly like Superman.
All right, so there.
You have Mon and the Be'er, yeah.
So regarding things like Kriyas Yamsuf and others.
We're out of that.
That's right. Okay, so the Maharal calls that, if you pardon my rephrasing it, the elastic clause in the laws of nature.
Okay, that's a very Maharal talk. That's a very sophisticated analysis. Malbum is not Maharal. The Maharal and the Malbum do not see eye to eye. That's not a contradiction to what I said. Of course, Hashem will conduct this world based upon man's behavior. That's a given. But when Hashem does that, Hashem behaves and does things, He's not doing things breaking the rules of science. But yet, there is an element in this world, and open a back door for Hashem on a regular basis, even today, for Hashem to maneuver and be part of this, the active activities of this world.
Right.
And you can't prove it. Hashem is brilliant.
But it's without deviating from a law of nature.
It doesn't break.
That's right.
It doesn't break. It doesn't break any law of nature. There is still a back door in the laws of nature for Hashem to operate, and in His operation does not break any law whatsoever. It's the perfect crime. Hashem created this world, the perfect crime. There is absolutely not a trace of evidence that Hashem is present in this world. Because that's what Emunah. Hashem, all these books, you go into a bookstore, you have a whole wall like this of books about proof of God's existence. Right? Take it any Judaic store. Proof of God's existence, scientific proof of God's existence.
That's not a Judaic story.
It's baloney. I'm not saying it. It's not going to help anyone. all these books to prove that God exists and show you science and science. Come on. At the end of the day, it's a very possible that it's not true. Shakai, the word Shakai. Hashem's name is Shakai, which Chazal tells us Sh'omar le'oilomoy dai. And which is explained by most of the commentators to mean is when Hashem created the world, he lined up creation, he says, we're going to commit the perfect crime. We're going to build the world, and there's going to be absolutely no evidence, scientific evidence whatsoever that I exist, that I did this, that this is my doing. What is a perfect crime? Every these novels about crime novels, only a $1 billion industry. How to commit the perfect crime? Okay, they have on the entertainment industry, they have these shows and shows about analyzing evidence, teeny little crazy, to put together a whole thing. Who committed the crime? Sherlock Holmes. Who committed the crime? Hashem committed the crime. Hashem made this world. And even Sherlock Holmes can't figure out that Hashem, because all the books you're going to see in Eichler's that tell you scientific proof that it's Hashem who made this world. Sorry, in a court of law, throw out the evidence. It's not conclusive. It's inconclusive. Emuna. If you don't have emuna, you have nothing. Nothing. You'll always find a way. You'll always find a way out.
The key word to all of that is there is evidence. There is no proof to that evidence.
You're finessing.
It's conclusive evidence, but there is evidence.
Once you know,
but there is no proof.
Once you have emuna, it's obvious.
There is no proof.
It's pure Torah. Like I told you yesterday with the Chofetz Chaim, it's so true. This statement with the Chofetz Chaim. This person who saw the Chofetz Chaim, he knew the Chofetz Chaim, he said about him, if you didn't know who he was, just an old man like anyone else in an assisted living facility, you wouldn't give him a second look. But if you know who he is and you watch him, wow, you will see in every movement he made, the way he blows his nose, the way he gets up, the way he walks, which foot he puts first. In everything that he does, you will witness Torah, Yirah Shamayim, Chochma, and Emunah in Hashem. If you watch, and you know who he is. And if you don't know that this is the Chofetz Chaim, you would never know. That's what that is. Zekeli v'anveyu. Ani v'hu. Imitate Hashem. Hashem. If you don't want to see, if you don't know that Hashem made this world, everything is a coincidence. Everything I would never know. When you know that Hashem made this world, every little thing is wow. Is a maisa nifla, a chokhmah from the Ribbono Shel Olam. For the finish of the album, Rav Michal, with the greatest respect, I don't believe that I'm explaining what the Malbim says. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he's just adding this, that Hashem, what does Hashem do? Well, it depends on how you behave. If you're a good guy, Hashem will deal with you one way. If you're a bad person, but the operation, there are two elements in this world. There is reality, science, believe in the science. You don't need to tell a person to believe in the science. Ridiculous. Everyone believes in science. It's part of the human condition to believe in science. What a crazy statement is that? Of course you believe in the science. And then there's a back door. There's a back door where Hashem is able to operate and not be detected. And his operation, it is not within the laws of science. Yet, it doesn't violate science. There's a whole dimension happening in this world that's just unbelievable.
By the way, we should have learned this Magen after Pasuk Dalit. Then he's talking, David says it. This is what David says here. So now it's
okay, as a hadoma.
This mizmor talks about that, what we are talking now.
Okay, it's a hadoma. We're going to get there. Okay, it's a hadoma. Okay. Summarize. Okay, so let's just remove, finish up over here. Vanhaga, the second line. Vanhaga hashkocha shein nages lufi masav bnei adam. Tayva ravir yidis hashem hashkocha. We've heard this minim hashkocha. Miuchedes al yidei Hashem. Specifically, those who fear Hashem. V'chosh veshma, those that think about Hashem. Raninu. Hinei b'sivu mizma akoydim. Amar simuch b'ashem v'gil b'sadikim v'harninu kol yishur lev. Ki yishonim heim. Okay, this is going into technical deal. I'm running out of time. Let's just finish the pasuk. It's basic shot in the pasuk. Ranu tzadikim b'Hashem.
Let's slow down a little bit.
Okay. So let's review the pasuk. Pasuk Aleph. Ranu tzadikim b'Hashem. I'm going now back to the... I forget. We're done. We're done with the Malbim. No more Malbim. Finished. Ad kan hakof Aleph. No more Malbim. Now, we have to finish the second half of the pasuk. The second half of the pasuk, because tomorrow we have the pasuk base. The second half is La Yisharim Nova Sihilo. What does that mean? For the Yisharim, okay, there's the Tzadikim and the Yisharim. Right now, we're not going to delve into the difference between the two. Just right now, Kofal Hamilois, Ha'inyin B'Milois Shonos, poetic expression. There are Tzadikim, there are Yisharim. Let's just keep it simple for now. Oh, the Tchelus Mordechai. What does the Tchilas Mordechai say?
One foot? Get 1 foot up. You know, the end of the Sefer Tainis, it says, there's a Machlekes Rishonim, which one is greater.
Is the Yashar, okay, so you'll tell us the details tomorrow, Mirtz Hashem. And let's not lie Yisharim, Nova, it is pleasant. It's a very beautiful word. Nova, Sihila. What does that mean? We say this every Shabbos. What do these words mean? Mitsudois David. Novasila Lohem. To them, Noel Halel La Hashem. It is fitting. Not pleasant. It is fitting, he learns, that the Yesharim should lead the Jewish people in giving praise. It doesn't mean, at least according to the Mitsudois David, that it is fitting that we should praise them. How do you learn it's possible? Is it a pshat that we want all of the Yesharim stand up on the stage, we want to give over words of praise? Are there any Kohanim here in the shul? Levim in the shul? Yisraelim? Avaryonim? Any Avaryonim? Are there any Yesharim? Will the Yesharim please stand on the bima? We want now to give words of praise. Because it says in the pasuk, La Yisharim, Nova Sihila. It's the Gabbai says. It says in the Tehillim, Shabbos Kodesh. So the Yisharim, please stand on the stage. We're all now going to praise you. So the Balaba says, Yisharim. That's not what it means in the pasuk. It doesn't mean that the Yisharim should be the recipients of praise. It means the Yisharim should lead the service. So the Gabbai, okay, good, you taught me. So go to the Amud. Are there any Yesharim here? Mayor, are you from the Yesharim? Elokim also es Hadam Yashar Vehem Bikshu Chishberno Yisrahim. Will the Yesharim lead the service? The Yesharim Nova, it is fitting Sihila that they should be the ones who give the praise, who teach the Jewish people how to praise Hashem. Mitzudas Lashab. Lohem Noel Lehalel LaHashem. Why? Ki heimo yaskilu mo michvoid golo. Because they understand. They get it. You need someone to teach you everything. You need a person to teach you how to give praise. That's a very big thing today. You should let's talk a very big thing. To teach people how to compliment. That's an art. That's one of the greatest arts. To teach you. I always like to say the most important tefila of the whole year. The most important tefillah is that the Birchas Rosh Chodesh is Chaim Shel Oysher V'Chavod. You should have a lot of kavanah when you say that, a lot of kavanah. And what does it mean? Money? Ah, money and kavod. What, really? That's the most important tefillah? Ezehu Oshir HaSoymeach V'Chavod.
The other passage is Or Zeru Batzadik Yishrei Leib Sipra. That's where
they interact. So, again, the two go together.
Or Zeruah, that's a Yosha, Yishrei Simcha.
Simcha.
So
Simcha Golos. This is what it says in your Sefer? This is what it says in your Sefer? You wrote, write this up?
Well, that pasuk is the end of the first paragraph of Sefer Chaimus. Because the whole discussion is Rishayim, is the whole discussion of which one is greater. A lot of different.
You have to fill this in. Have some homework.
It's a great way.
Okay, well, listen. We'll hear a share. Yeah. We're going to listen. You'll fill us in. If you're Sasha.
Like in the, you say at the, what's it called, not the tail, but at the end, on the fast day or something, what does it say the time to do? It says, Tzadikim, Yishorim, Chasidim. So you bring a riot for Leah because you're going up in scale. This is Chasidim.
Oh, Mesilas Yisharim. Yeah.
So they bring different riots from
that. You wrote this all up?
Look, you have to see it inside.
You wrote this all up in your Sefer?
Yeah, it's in the Sefer.
Okay, I have it. Chelis Mordechai. All right, Mordechai Mintz. We will, we have to.
Sing that Nigin, you have a higher, deeper meaning. The difference between the Tzadik and the Yosho.
Very good. We got to delve into this. So
what's
you're changing the okay.
There's a
inflection.
Famous,
the inflection says it all.
Somehow it's belongs to Shabbat.
Okay, we have to go to the Mizmar. We'll see. There's no Avil in creation.
It's at the end of creation is Shabbat. Then you understand the
Yashmut of Akadosh Baruch Hu. So you're saying something else. You're saying is that basically
you don't see it in the middle of the week. You see so many.
Let me paraphrase what you're trying to say is that when Hashem created the world on day one, whoever existed, no one existed really then, would be choshed Hashem that you've done harm. On day two, Hashem, what are you doing? You're guilty. You've done a lot of harm. Day three, there's more harm. Day four. They thought they said, when it came Shabbos, now we realize you had a plan all along. Each day of the week what was created really was a creation of chaos, a creation of tzaras. And each element in and of itself is a violent act. Each day, the sun is a violent fire, okay. Animals are not very pleasant creatures. Just if you don't believe me, open up all the gates of the Brang Zoo and see what happens. Every single element of creation, there's violence. What are you doing, Hashem? What are you doing? You're creating a world of Chorban, a world of Tsar, and it came Shabbos. Oh, now retroactively, you see there was a plan. And everything falls into its place and you see the beauty and the benefit of creation. Okay, we'll come to that. But right now, the bottom line over here is Ranu Tzadikim Hashem made the Tzadikim. These both expressions over here are giving instructions. We call upon the Tzadikim to sing to Hashem. We call upon the Yesharim. For them, it is fitting sihila that they should lead in giving praise. I said before, Achayim sheyesh bohem, Achayim oisher v'chavoy, oisher, eizeh osher hasimech b'chelkoy, and what is chavoy? Eizehu mechubad. Eizehu mechubad ha-mechabed. Who is a mechubad? The one that knows how to give chavoy. To know how to give chavoy is an art. And not everyone knows, and you need to be taught. You need to be taught how to give honor. Tehillah is the greatest form of honor, to give honor to Hashem. You need someone to teach you how to give honor to Hashem. And the Yesharim, they are the masters of Tehillah, and they are therefore assigned to be the teachers of the Jewish people to lead and teach how to give praise. Let's take a short break. We'll learn a little bit about Shavuos and
the Talmud. By the way, the mountain brings Yisharim, Gedolim, and Tzadikim.
There are many opinions about this. Which one is bigger? All different elements. Who
he's
says
taking
what?
One side. It's actually about Christ, right?
Or maybe not necessarily one is greater. They're different. different doesn't necessarily mean one has to be at a higher level.
I talked about that too. Look at the piece there. It could be different aspects.
Right. Different dimensions. Each one has their mile.
You're supposed to be looking at
yourself. You're right. You didn't give it to me to put on the shelf and collect dust.
The second one was the shortened version, you know, in case people over. We mentioned this also, the Yesharim, stand guilty, Yaskim.
Wisdom. The Yashad have Chachma.
Full nature of the Yashad.
Thanks for the video clip.